She couldn't be wearing this.
I sit next to you too many times to let you down.
Paul, you ready to go?
Thank you.
Ready to go, Paul?
Yes, sir.
Well, we'll call the meeting to order. This is the initial meeting of the Joint Interim Committee on Department of Energy Oversight. Colleagues, this won't take very long tonight. The intent tonight is just to do really an introduction of our charge. And we have one administrative thing to do that maybe we should do first, which is adopt committee rules. Beth, do we have committee rules?
We do.
Are they any different than we always get?
There was one question that Senator Whitsett brought up about the rules, which I think we've resolved.
Okay.
So generally, I think they're consistent with your typical set of rules.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move that we adopt the interim rules for this Joint Interim Committee on the Department of Energy Oversight as presented.
Do we have a copy of the amended rules?
Yes, we do.
As presented. Say,
we probably ought to pretend that we looked at them.
They are also
They are. I've often wondered why we do these in each committee, because they're always the same,
yeah.
And why we just don't do them in the chamber rules. But we have them. Has everybody got a copy?
We have some rogue committees here and there.
But Mr. Chair, my concern had been on the original item 5, testimony is welcome at the invitation of a presiding co-chair or the request of a majority of the members. That would appear to have precluded public testimony.
And we will
changed.
Take care of that concern
okay.
in just a minute. All righty, so we have a motion in front of us to adopt the rules. Is there any discussion on that motion? Is there any opposition to that motion? Seeing none, the rules are adopted. We now then, let's just take a look here. This is the charge that you have in front of us that was put forward by the leadership of both chambers. And essentially, I interpret this to be, and I think Co-Chair Hovey does, is our intent is to take the time and go through the entire department, do an overview, go through each program so that we'll understand it, talk to others who might need to or have comments about that. Obviously, people have concerns about some of the programs and that. And then at the end of the time, determine if we need to make recommendations and legislation. So our thought, Representative Holbrook's and my thought would be, and we have the approval from leadership, is we will not meet during the special session regular February session, unless towards the end we have some time on our hands. And if that's the case, where people are not committed elsewhere, we would do an initial public hearing. If that doesn't happen, we would then move into March or April and start off with a public hearing so that people can raise their issues. Then we would follow that up once a month, with target date of trying to be done by October, with going through the department, each program, allowing people to speak at that time, and concluding after we've done that, assuming we have some discussions and recommendations, with again holding a public hearing on whatever recommendations we're considering. So it'd be my intent that, you know, they gave us a task and we're going to go into the details and look at each program, and part of that is deciding whether understanding what the charge was when it was initially adopted, whether that charge still makes sense and is still a public priority, and if so, what changes, if any, are necessary to do that. So pretty much a nuts and bolts, serious business look at the department, trying to get out of all the emotions around it. Representative Foley?
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think that's pretty much in line with what we talked about. I think we also talked about and I really hope we are able to meet, you know, as the committee shut down before we adjourn, because everybody's here. It's convenient, since we're all here and Cliff doesn't have to drive, you know, because I always hear how long it takes him to drive here. And so since he's here, you know, I thought, you know, meeting before we adjourn this February session. And I'm hoping that Beth can figure out how to do that. So that's a good piece of it. And I'm also hoping that, you know, as committee members, we'll be able to, between now and that first hearing, we'll think about what kind of specific questions members may want answers to, you know, to help us, you know, move forward with this charge. And you know, so I think that would be helpful to get some input from the committee members. And I'd like to also hopefully do that same outreach to stakeholders at a public hearing for them to think about what kind of answers and questions they have, or questions, I guess, they have. And we'll hopefully try to get some answers to those specific questions, or what their issues are, or what they think we should be looking at. So I'd like to kind of get that public, if that's agreeable, just to get that input for us as we're getting going on this.
To get at Senator Olson's question, Senator Olson had asked, just as we're getting started, what the reference and the charge to the tax credit was. It's my understanding from leadership, and I think, Paul, you had the same one, is that there's the issue of, well, the treasurer's letter about the SELP program being over the top so far. Well, that's the loan side. There's also the tax credits piece of that. That the Revenue Committee is going to look at that during the 16th session. Our charge, you know, they're going to do whatever Band-Aid they deem appropriate, what the body does at that period of time. But our charge will be to, whatever they do, will be to look at the programs throughout the year in a thorough fashion. And I should say, one of the directions, at least on the Senate side, was as we look at them, if the program is still appropriate, is also look, are there alternative delivery mechanisms that make sense? So we'll be talking, we may be talking to other departments like Revenue or Business Oregon in terms of can they operate those programs as well. So
Mr. Chair.
That's kind of the overlie of, you know, what we'll do it. And again, the schedule that we envision is about once a month meeting. Senator.
Thank you very much. I guess one of the questions I have is when they give tax credits, are we going to delve into how they ascertain who should receive that credit, how they determine if it's a good, functional, operating company that should receive the credit, and how they came to that determination? Are we going? Is that part of our task, or is that the other guys?
We will be doing that on understanding the program. If you're talking, are we going to go through the list of 1,000
credits?
I don't think we're going to do that.
No.
We're going to do what the membership of this committee feels is necessary to make an informed recommendations to the body.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I would add to that. I think, you know, we should be aware of the tax credits and programs and all that, but the tax credit policy issues are reviewed by the legislature in different policy committees and in the revenue committees already. And so I think they were looking at not duplicating that particular effort and trying to determine whether this tax credit is a good tax credit or bad tax credit. That's something that that conversation goes, you know.
If I may, it's not that I want to know if it's good or bad, but we're supposed to look at their mission and their statutory responsibilities, and their statutory responsibilities are to determine if a organization that comes forward for a tax credit is, what's the word I want to use? Not reliable, but able to perform on the credit they were just given.
Yeah.
And that, to me, would be a statutory responsibility. Can this person actually do what they said they were going to do? And then we'll give them a credit to follow up on that.
Those are appropriate questions that we should be asking as we go through it.
Thank you very much.
How do they do that, and
right,
what's the skill set, and what else? Senator.
Thank you. We've talked about prospective analyses. I would hope that we're not precluding a retrospective analyses. Because the, as I understood, the genesis of this bicameral committee was to determine some of the things that have happened in the past, why they happened, and make sure they don't happen again, including in the Betsy program and the SILP program, allegations of favoritism and third-party brokerages, incomplete records on Department of Energy, all that sort of thing, and I think that those issues need to be delved into.
I agree.
Yes, I think we should certainly be aware of the historical background.
Okay. I'm looking down this way. Is there any other questions or comments down here?
No, I'm looking forward to the work that this committee is going to do, and I think that it would be for the benefit of the committee to, you know, bring in folks from LRO to help us get the background information that we need on some of the more historical and arcane elements of
policy and the tax credit to get some understanding of that. So, but looking forward to the larger discussion as well.
And, okay, if there are no other questions, we can do it real quick. Mr. Kaplan. We're going to get to know you real well, Mike. We've asked the department to provide a very quick sort of touch ground on the overview of the department, where we're going. I should say that one of the things that my co-chair and I had asked him to do is not necessarily tonight, but prepare a matrix that had all of their programs and their structure with the site of where is it in the statute that it was originally created, what's its purpose, and to some degree, what's its track record or problems that have been. So we have a basis to do that.
Chair Byer, members of the committee, we'll have that matrix ready shortly with any packet of follow-up that we have from today. We'll have it ready by the end
tonight.
Of the week. Co-Chair Byer, Co-Chair Holvey, members of the committee, good evening. For the record, I'm Michael Kaplan, Director of the Oregon Department of Energy. I want to begin by expressing my gratitude to this committee. No matter what recommendations ultimately result from this process, I already appreciate the resources that you will devote to this effort over the course of the coming year. The problems the current staff of the Department of Energy are working hard to solve did not happen overnight. They were created over years, and they have compounded. To provide some perspective on that point, at a future meeting, I'm sure we'll talk about our loan program, and that conversation will likely focus on a handful of significant losses within the portfolio. One of those troubled loans, a contributor to our deficit, was originated when I was 14 years old. These are not new challenges. But our challenges are also not all that we do. Though it doesn't garner much attention, while we have grappled with our financial programs, we have also continued to contribute to policy development, to program implementation, to site energy projects throughout the state, and to protect our state. The Department of Energy has undeniably made mistakes. I will accept responsibility wherever I can, and I will be accountable for the decisions I have made during my tenure as ODOE's director. I look forward to a thorough discussion of the circumstances that led to programs with long and positive track records significantly and quickly changing course, and how those changes proved challenging for ODOE to handle. Not only is the future of the Department of Energy and energy policy in Oregon at issue here, but there is also an opportunity to take lessons from this work and apply it throughout state government for the future. No one is more eager to contribute to solutions than we are. We want the opportunity to focus on Oregon's energy future and to move forward. Briefly, I would like to discuss where we come from. In the early 1970s, the U.S. saw gas prices quadruple and energy awareness grow significantly. Sweeping federal legislation was passed, reflecting the importance of resource conservation and environmental protection, and specific concerns about energy use and availability. All of that ultimately led to the creation of the United States Department of Energy in 1977. Then, as we are now, Oregon was ahead of the curve. The State Department of Energy was created in 1975 with a dramatically forward-looking premise. It is the goal of Oregon to promote efficient use of energy resources and to develop permanent, sustainable energy resources. ODOE was established to provide statewide energy leadership. This includes energy conservation, renewable energy, energy planning and siting of energy facilities, expertise on emerging energy technologies, and educational and technical assistance to industry and the public. Among a handful of other statutes, some of our responsibilities are to collect and analyze energy statistics to provide technical and policy analysis for the state. We ensure state preparedness to respond to emergencies at energy facilities and in the event of petroleum shortages. We educate the public on ways to conserve energy, and we protect Oregon from radioactive materials at Hanford. Our history includes the adoption of arguably the nation's first green lending program. When cleanup efforts were starting at the Hanford site in Washington, the legislature directed us to begin work that will likely not end for another 50 to 60 years, if not longer. And we started working on greenhouse gas reduction strategies before it was cool, more than 25 years ago. Over the last 20 years, we've seen EFSEC charged with setting CO2 emission standards, the formation of the Global Warming Commission, and the expansion of the Business Energy Tax Credit and the use of the Small Scale Energy Loan Program as an economic development tool. bringing us current, we have a long and rich history despite our recent troubles, and we continue to work toward the future. Our policy team has recently completed a 5-year energy policy framework that sets the stage for where our resources will be devoted in the future and the types of challenges that we expect to be asked to address. More importantly, we have been sharing that work extensively and soliciting feedback to ensure we are on the right track with our stakeholders throughout Oregon. We are working collaboratively with state agencies and stakeholders to implement the Clean Power Plan, and we continue to take on and work through complex and inherently controversial energy projects that are sited throughout the state. But what we are most identified for are those things that went wrong in our administration of tax credit and other incentive programs. The business energy tax credit, the small-scale energy loan program, the energy incentive program, the biomass producer and collector tax credit, and the residential energy tax credit have all made positive impacts in our state despite those challenges. Our programs have helped to develop and change markets and kept Oregon among national leaders in implementing energy policy. But we have struggled mightily with these initiatives, keeping up with their size, appropriately managing risk, and consistently and uniformly managing these programs clearly have proved to be a reasonable expectation that we did not uniformly meet. As we will discuss in the future, strategies changed, legislation changed, rules changed, lawsuits were served, leadership changed, staff changed, and the economy changed, and the Department of Energy struggled mightily to keep pace. When I came to ODO in August 2013 as its deputy director, the agency was nearing Betsy's final sunset, and the last remaining projects eligible for those credits were being completed up until its final deadline. Meanwhile, decisions that the department had made were being questioned by the media, by the legislature, and by the public. The agency had gone through a series of directors. I am the fifth in 6 years, which inherently creates instability. ODO is currently a 92-person agency, though we have budget authority for 106.5 FTE. Over the course of the last 18 months, we have worked hard to identify and implement administrative savings because of issues related to the energy supplier assessment, one of our primary revenue sources, which we discussed extensively with our Ways and Means Subcommittee last February. At a high level, budget decisions made during budget development for the 13-15 biennium created a significant burden for the agency's future. Within a few weeks of taking over as acting director, I cut 6 positions from the budget. We rolled those cuts into this biennium's budget, along with the closure of 2 remote offices and a wealth of smaller cuts. We have made our agency leaner. We have asked for all of our divisions to challenge conventional thinking to figure out how to do our jobs more efficiently. And yet, most importantly, we made those cuts without impacting our program performance. Despite our best attempt to control negative outcomes from the decisions in the 13-15 budget development, we have been recently subject to a lawsuit around the energy supplier assessment. That case is just beginning its journey through the court system. Our agency receives no general fund. We are supported by revenue from our loan portfolio, from fees for service, federal grants, and the energy supplier assessment. We're organized into 5 divisions: energy planning and innovation, nuclear safety and emergency preparedness, the energy facility siting division, energy development services, and central services. I'd like to briefly touch on each and a component piece of the kind of work that they do. Energy planning and innovation is the policy and programmatic arm of energy policy development and application throughout Oregon. We provide analytic resources, technical expertise, program management that directly impacts the entire state. We assist schools, businesses, both small and large, local government agencies, our sister state agencies, our state's utilities, and individuals. Brief examples of this can be seen in 2 vastly different but important initiatives. First, ODO is responsible for certifying renewable resource eligibility for the Renewable Portfolio Standard, and we provide impartial analysis to stakeholders throughout Oregon to help understand and advise and administer the responsibilities of RPS compliance. Alternatively, we also have programs like SEED, the State Energy Efficient Design Program. The state and other governments throughout Oregon own a lot of space and accordingly use a lot of energy. The opportunity to improve energy efficiency and save taxpayers' money is important, and so is the state's obligation to lead by example. ODO has the technical resources available to help those buildings become more energy efficient. Just this past year, we were able to meet the state's goal to have state agencies reduce energy use in their buildings by more than 20%. We met that goal 2 years ahead of schedule. On this slide are a list of other accomplishments from the previous year, which has been a busy one for our Policy and Innovation Division. A few examples are that we recently brought together national partners to fund a grant for the Eugene Water and Electric Board to pilot an energy storage and resiliency project. We gathered information for the American Council for Energy Efficient Economy, which placed us fourth nationally among all states for energy efficiency. As I mentioned earlier, we've partnered and continue to partner with other state agencies on Oregon's response to the Clean Power Plan. And there's much more that we look forward to discussing with you in the future. Moving on, our Nuclear Safety and Emergency Preparedness Division provides a number of active services to the state and prepares to respond with services we actually hope never to have to provide. We help ensure Hanford cleanup decisions are mindful of Oregon and its interests in the Columbia River. However, our role there is not regulatory in nature. It's significantly more nuanced. We staff the Oregon Hanford Cleanup Board, and we also oversee transportation of nuclear materials across Oregon's roadways. I moved too fast. I apologize. Or there's a slide missing. About 29,000 Oregonians live within the 50-mile nuclear emergency planning zone for both Hanford and the Columbia Generating Station, a nuclear facility in Washington. Oregon's primary concern with radioactive material release from Hanford or Columbia Generating Station is that it will reach or contaminate water and food products, and we want to restrict those movement of those products to the marketplace. Oregon works with Morrow and Umatilla counties and several other state agencies to regularly test the Nuclear Emergency Preparedness Program. And we prepare and maintain Oregon's Petroleum Contingency Plan, which includes fuel allocation procedures to ensure fuel is provided to the state's emergency and essential service providers in case of a fuel shortage or crisis. For example, if we experience a significant earthquake, it is the purpose of the plan to provide an effective, well-coordinated response with industry, governments, and local organizations, and ultimately ODO's responsibility to allocate petroleum that we have available to critical state agencies, tribes, and counties. Our Energy Facility Siting Division, whose responsibility is to provide and implement a fair, prescribed, and methodical process to evaluate proposed energy facilities across the state, is the next division we want to briefly touch on. The decisions made by that division, by that council, are not intended to be quick. The process for reviewing and analyzing a proposed energy facility is thoughtful, with ample room for public involvement. That means that the developer, the public, and of course local regional governments, other state agencies, businesses, and anyone else directly or tangentially affected has an opportunity to participate. We provide a process that accommodates everyone on every side of any issue while providing a forum that puts our state's permitting and regulatory requirements into one process. The path to site a project is a long one, usually taking many years. I'm sure we'll discuss that process in more depth in the future, but at this current date, we have 27 projects that have site certificates in Oregon, with a handful of others somewhere on the timeline that you see on this slide working toward earning site certificates. The map included here shows those facilities currently under FSEC jurisdiction. After facilities are approved and built, ODO conducts regular compliance visits. The next division is Energy Development Services. This is the division that has been tasked with running our incentive and loan programs. We currently distribute grants for renewable energy projects, loans for alternative fuel vehicles and additional energy projects, and provide incentives to residential, business, and public projects. By far, our most popular program, the one we hear from Oregonians about most, is the Residential Energy Tax Credit Program. For more than 35 years, we have worked to ensure that energy-efficient devices are adopted among Oregonians and installed in their homes. We regularly tweak and maintain the program to help ensure that we are able to effectively transform our markets. We update our rules to ensure that the energy efficiency of devices improves over time, and as they do and are adopted into the marketplace, we're able to move to focus on new devices and different technologies. The consequences of the years ODO has spent struggling managing our financial program has in some measure been the foundational administrative functions that an agency must rely on to maintain success. In 2015, we focused on many of these neglected areas. I already mentioned the budget, but this past legislative session, we asked for additional controls on our RETC program and to give us more authority over large tax credits, over large tax credit recipients via performance agreements. Prior to last session, the only authority that the department had to recover a tax credit was in the case of fraud or misrepresentation. We will soon be able to recover tax credits for failure to perform as well. We have completed an IT data scoping project to evaluate and make recommendations to improve our antiquated data collection systems. We have raised fees to address operational deficits that had been allowed to develop over time within the department. We have identified and corrected a number of administrative errors as well in several of our tax credit programs, including identifying and correcting more than 60 occurrences where we incorrectly applied net present value rates to projects in our energy incentive program. We've worked hard over the last 6 months on our SELP program, on accounting, cash projection models, and other administrative resources to ensure the program's health as the state decides how it should be utilized in the future. These are only few of the types of problems that we've found and corrected within the division. Finally, each division is supported by Central Services, our administrative arm, and the Director's Office. As you can expect, budget, procurement, internal audit, communications, HR all work out of this division. We have worked extremely hard throughout Central Services to improve every area that we can, but two specific areas that we've focused on are our IT resources and capabilities and our communication capacity. Again, each of these divisions will receive more attention in the future. Relatively mundane things, such as starting newsletters, improving our filing, beginning work to redesign our website, and a longer, relatively boring, but vitally important list of improvements are also happening. The Department of Energy is working hard to recover, and we are eager for your help and expertise and support in whatever form it comes. Thank you, and I'd be happy to take any questions from you now.
Thank you, Mike. And I will note that if you haven't noticed that I see Senator Whitsitt has it here, but this is on our website, or on the committee's website, so it is available. The intent tonight is not to go into details on these. We're not scheduled for that, but just to give you an overview. Are there initial questions, and particularly as you've just done this, are there specific pieces of information that you would like to have from the department? Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. In addition to the Betsy stuff that we've talked about before, Mike, the Hanford issue on the CSGS River Governance Panel for the Columbia, we've said two or three presentations of this over the years. That is a plume of toxic nuclear waste that is approaching the Columbia River uncontained. And I think that it was something that we ought to really hear about because it is a potential ecological disaster. On the SILT program, we know there are a lot of loans that are now upside down. I would like to know, get an evaluation of the existing loan portfolio and which ones are in good shape, which ones of them are marginal, which ones of them are ready to crash, which ones of them are in default, that sort of thing, to get an idea of whether the $20 million default is accurate or whether
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Whitsitt, I think we, on both fronts, we would really appreciate the opportunity to get clear information on both of those subjects out to you. We're actually eager to talk about both.
And the third thing I want to talk about is FSEC, and that is from the standpoint of the public, what I've heard for years and experienced myself firsthand is that the public input in that Citing Facility Council's proceedings is meaningless. They decide what they're going to do, and they do it. And I think that's another thing that we should would hopefully have a little testimony on, because there's some ongoing things that are very citing options that are now under consideration. There's a lot of pushback for, and I could sit in your seat and tell you an hour and a half long story about that. You know, so those are things I'd like to push.
Okay. I'm sure we'll get to each of those.
Yeah, Chair Beyer, again, members of the committee, Senator Whitsitt. Again, with all of these things, I think we will happily and eagerly discuss all of them, and we'd really hope to come back and talk about FSEC in a lot of detail. That would be wonderful.
other comments or requests for information?
Chair.
Senator?
I would like to see the information that you put together on the solar array that was supposed to be built in Christmas Valley and you put a $10 million credit on.
Senator Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Olson, that credit was never distributed. But we would be happy to talk to you about it in detail, but that tax credit never went out the door. It was never approved.
I understand it, but I'd like to see the process on how you determine that this individual should get that credit.
Senator Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Olson, we'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
When we get to talking about that program, that would be a good illustration to walk through, maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
Others? It's silent now, they said. Is it the noisy senators? Is that the deal? No, we were going to get agreement on that. Beth, is there anything else that we need to take care of tonight?
No, not tonight.
Again, as you get home and are thinking about this after these days and before you get in session, if there's specific things you want, please send them electronically to Beth, and we'll make sure that we have that. And it's likely that we'll try to get that public meeting or public comment period towards the end of this session in February, if we can work that out in details, and we'll be starting monthly after that, walking through the program.
There's one other thing.
Senator Whitsitt?
Mr. Chair, dividing the capital gains tax issue from the Betsy process issue is going to be very difficult and likely counterproductive because they are part and parcel of the same issue. So to have two separate committees doing that separately is unlikely to uncover much new information.
You need to take that one up with the leadership.
So, I've asked the speaker's office about that particular issue, how we're drawing the line here, and we're going to be having some discussions with the LRO and the revenue chairs and trying to figure out where is most appropriate for us to focus on and so we don't have a lot of duplicative efforts.
Yeah.
with the revenue committee, because I know they're tasked with some tax, a lot of the tax credit numbers.
Representative?
Yeah, thank you. And I just wanted to kind of put in my two cents on that issue. I mean, I really look forward to this committee. I was actually glad to serve on this committee, even though I'm quacking practically, but because I wanted to really see what we could do and make a difference in the next, you know, several months on what we can do to improve what the agency is doing going forward so that we can serve the best interests of Oregonians on this level. And I'm really looking forward to doing that. And I think that absolutely that includes looking at the process that's in place to you know, put these programs in place and making sure that the legislature, when we make a request of this agency or any agency really, is making sure that they have the resources and the capacity to do what we're asking them to do. And so I'm really looking forward to those conversations.
Okay. More? If not, we've gone a little longer than I thought we would go, but... Co-chair, do you have anything else?
No, we just please. We may try to put out a small doodle if we ever figure out a date. You know, just to make sure we have get everybody an opportunity to be at that next meeting. And I'm hoping we can do that far enough in advance so that we can have some stakeholder public hearing at that next meeting as well.
Good enough. If there's nothing else, last chance. We are adjourned.
Chris, I got this for you.
Okay.
We are adjourned.
Chris, I got this for you.
Okay.